Okay, well, we never did talk about molecular politics, so we'll just talk about that. We don't have time enough to do the healing, so we just have enough time to cover some of the basics. So I was going to include an update on that a little bit. Let me recap the basic philosophy of molecular politics, and I've been presenting this on TV. I've made 5 shows so far. I put 1 on the internet. I'm going to put the other 4 on shortly, and I'll be producing 1 a week throughout the summer. And I'm debating, you know, whether to continue it after that. It doesn't get a lot of exposure on community TV, but we'll see how much exposure I get on the internet. But I've got some other ideas as to how to promote it. And, of course, when I publish my book, that will help. But let me recap basically how it works. The principle is this, or the idea is this, is that we have a republic. And in the republic, we elect representatives that are supposed to go to Congress and represent the will of the people. The basic idea of the founders was, you know, if we get together and we represent the most intelligent, the cream of the crop, and they go to Congress, they will actually be able to make more intelligent decisions than the average people, and so we'll have the best possible government. Now, Jefferson was really interested in a majority rule type thing, but it was impractical, and even Jefferson acknowledged that it was impractical because, you know, how in the world are you going to poll or get votes from the majority on issue by issue? It was virtually impossible. And so even the majority rule type people like Jefferson and a handful of others acquiesced to the representative government because that was really the only government that was practical. So there wasn't, it was as close to a participatory government as was possible to create at that time. And what swayed everybody into going with the idea was that we're going to just send the cream of the crop in there. We'll take the most intelligent people that we can find, you know, more intelligent than just the average farmer out there taking care of his kids, but we'll take the cream of the crop. And intelligent people, kind of people that are still hardworking, you know, people that understand the working by the sweat of the brow and all that. But we're going to get the most intelligent people, send them in there, and they're going to make such good decisions that the majority of the people will think, you know, we're represented pretty good by these guys. These guys are pretty smart. They're more informed than we are, and so we're pretty happy. And for the first, you know, when we first started our government, that's a little bit the way the people felt. People felt that, you know, we do have the kind of the cream of the crop in there. A lot of people, some people were always dissatisfied. You never get everybody happy with any government, no matter how good it is. After all, everybody wasn't happy with Jesus. I mean, they were so unhappy with him, they crucified him. So you can't, even if you get the most ideal people in, a certain number of people are going to grumble about it. But what's happened is we've had all kinds of influences creep into our government that have interfered with our representatives representing the people. And I'll just name a few really quick. Number one, when they get in, the party leaders get a hold of them first thing. And they say, hey, we got this bill coming up. You going to vote with the party or are you going to vote with those stupid guys from the other party? Well, I don't know. I'm going to make my own decision. Well, you know, if you don't go along, you know, you're not going to get any support for your next election. We'll make sure you don't get finances. We'll make sure you don't get support. So, you know, while you're in here, you got to play the game. You got to learn the rules, how things work here in Washington, D.C. Are you going to vote with, you know, the majority leaders? Or not? Well, I'll see what I can do, you know. So he's got that strong pressure on him. And when he votes with what the party leaders want him to vote, is he representing the people back home? No, he's not representing the people back home. And when this happens, you know, sometimes the people back home are happy with what the majority leaders want, but sometimes they aren't. And so oftentimes people back home feel that they are not being represented properly. And there's lots of other ways. I listed 9 altogether, but just name a couple others here. The lobbyists. The lobbyists come in and they'll take the guy and they'll wine and they'll dine him and they'll say, now we've become really good friends, you know, and we bought you this trip to the Caribbean kind of under the table. There's a couple favors we ask of you guys. So the lobbyists make really good friends with these guys. They visit them quite often and they do them favors that are really worth a lot of money, but you can't really pin onto the congressman taking money because it's done in such subtle ways. But they get a lot of benefits from these lobbyists. And so the lobbyists come in and say, you know, we need a favor. We got this bill coming up. We need you to vote for this bill. We need the funding from this bill. So us taxpayers have to supply all this funding, and our congressman goes along with it, and he doesn't hardly hear anything from the folks back home, because maybe the folks back home, the bill was so under the table and ill-publicized that the folks back home don't even know about it. They all of a sudden they read in the paper, congressman votes on bill. What? I didn't even know that bill was up for grabs. You know, I never even had a chance to write a letter about it. So is that representing the will of the people? No, not representing the will of the people at all. Nothing like the founders had in mind. Often they'll trade votes. Congressman from Pennsylvania comes to a congressman from Idaho and says, you know, I need this funding to restore Niagara Falls to its original state or something. And the guy from Idaho says, well, yeah, I need this funding to save some salmon in Idaho. I tell you what, I'll vote for your project and you vote for mine. And both of the projects cost a bundle of money. So us taxpayers are spending a bundle of money in Niagara Falls and the salmon in Idaho. And maybe both of them are completely unnecessary. Who knows? But both the bills go through because these congressmen traded votes. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Are we being represented? No, we're not being represented at all. Another interesting way that we're not represented is we've talked a lot about thought forms. Another thing, thought forms surface in Congress through what I call Washington group think, which is basically people go to Washington and they tune into a thought form. You ever notice we will often send a guy to Congress and we think, boy, this is a new type of politician. He seemed like a great guy. He acts like he's really going to listen to us. I really like this guy. We send him to Congress, and then about 6 months later, he's just like everybody else. We think, boy, what happened to this guy? Did we misunderstand him? We thought we voted for kind of just a regular guy like us, and now he gets here. He's not like us at all. He's like them. What happened? What happened is this. One of the basic desires of all people is everybody wants to be liked and loved by people that surround them. Now, when the guy goes to Congress, maybe we liked and loved him when we first elected him, but when he's in Washington, he's a long way from us. And who are the people that determine whether or not he's liked and loved? It's not us, but it's people in Washington. And Washington has a certain type of group energy. And there's certain things that they show whether or not you're accepted. Like, do you get invited to the right parties? Do you get favorable notations by the Washington Post, by the New York Times? Do you get favorable comments from the media, from ABC, NBC, MSNBC, all these different news media? Do you get favorable comments from these guys? Do they like you? And so our Congress people get there, and they find out that if they vote according to the will of people, that everybody in Washington just hates their guts. They're like a pariah there. Everybody just can't stand them. And if pretty soon, if you're around people that you just feel hate and loathing from for so long, you think, man, I don't like this. So maybe I maybe I better rethink my, maybe I'm a little bit wrong on this. You know, maybe I'm just not seeing correctly. So he begins to tune in to the Washington thought form, which is very much different than anything in flyover country. The flyover country people think totally different than the people in Washington, D.C. Yet, once the guy gets submerged in the Washington, D.C. thought form, the flyover people are not even in his consciousness anymore. Who's in his consciousness are the people there that will invite him to parties, that will write about him, that will praise him, and the fellow colleagues also. If he votes contrary to the establishment there, his colleagues won't like him either. Maybe not his own party will like him if he votes according to the will of the people. A CBS poll a few weeks ago had the approval rate of Congress by what? Does anyone guess what it was? No, that's, CBS is establishment media. It's not fringe.
30-something percent?
No. Go lower.
22.
Lower.
15, I think.
Really?
15. 15%. That makes George Bush look like Mr. Rogers, doesn't it? Or Santa Claus, or somebody real popular. So George Bush at his lowest was around 33 or something like that, or somewhere in the 30s. Yet Congress was 15%. But when you're there, you're not thinking of that. You're thinking of, well, you're spending all your time with your colleagues and the people there. What matters to the Congress people when they're there is, well, what do the people I'm working with think about me?